We're just getting started. If you if what we would like to do, if you guys, we have a ton of people on the call, so you guys could go into the chat and just dump your email and agency, your name, email address, and your agency name. That would be really helpful for us so we can just log who is on this call. We would greatly appreciate it. We appreciate everyone's time taking an hour and a half of your day. I know is a lot of time to take from everyone, but we think it's very important for us to go through what our process is going to be as we come through the counties and complete your final cutover to our new P25 system. We are really excited to get started on this. I'm sure you guys are as well and get it under your belt. But we want to make sure that you guys kind of understand a flow of what's going to happen, what our expectations of the PSAPs are, what our expectation of the agencies are, what you can expect from us. And as you guys have seen from the schedule, we're on a very tight time frame. When we came into town, we've done a lot of pre-work, especially at the PSAPs, where we've had most of the backup, the back end work that needs to be done as far as connecting the VHF resources to the interop gateways that we've installed in the back of the PSAP. So there's been a lot of preparation. We appreciate all of the help that we've received from the PSAPs and from the different agencies through soft cutover. I know it's not best case scenario to have every radio brought in and to be programmed multiple times within a 3 to 4 month period. So we appreciate your patience with that process. I think that for us, it was very valuable, and it was a really good learning experience in terms of the information that we got from that, especially in terms of the information that we were able to pass along to you, whether it was tweaking the code plugs or letting you know that your radios weren't going to be compliant on the system so that you had time to get additional radios, things like that. So we want it to be interactive. So we've got a whole slew of slides. I've got several of our team that are on. And so please, if you do have questions, I'll monitor the hands being raised, or shoot an email into the chat if you want. I'll kind of monitor that as my team goes through their different slides. So let's get started. I think that we're starting with Phil. So if you want to go ahead and get started, and then, like I said, I'll monitor the chat and monitor for hands up for questions. So thank you again for your time, you guys.
Welcome everyone. Can you guys hear me? Checking to be sure.
Yeah. I can hear you.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. As Tina said, we're going to jump into schedule first. We've got two agenda slides, so that kind of tells you we've got quite a few slides here to go through. And they're kind of all over the place, to be honest. Some of them hit console information, some of them hit PSAP, some of it hits radio programming. This is kind of the loose end slide set. Things that we know about that you folks need to know about going into cutover. So you can see here's the second half of our agenda. And we'll jump right into the schedule. So
I can't see a screen. I don't know if that's just me. Share screen. I can't see one.
Anyone else here?
Yeah, we can see it.
Let me stop and restart.
I can see it.
It's up and going.
All right, Deb, how's that?
Honestly, I can't see it, but maybe I'm doing something wrong, so please proceed.
Okay. Works out. If not, we obviously will be sending slides out afterwards, like a PDF or something. So this is the schedule that we've come up on, more detail than the schedule that's out on our website. So on the left-hand side, you can basically see the website schedule. Again, it's too big to fit on one slide, and we'll be sending these out. So no need to like screen grab it or whatever. You can just wait for it to be sent. In the middle column, we've got our PSAP visits. So that's my team, Phil Krebs. We're covering the PSAP visits along with L3 Harris. So you'll have folks from both teams out there. You can kind of see that sometimes there are multiple PSAPs per county, and sometimes there's multiple counties per PSAP. And so we basically have dates that line up in that fashion. I guess I'll flip forward to the next slide so you can look at the rest of the PSAP column. And then I'll hand it over to Mike Beanadel. One second. Okay, yeah, let me flip to the next slide. All right, Mike, do you want to talk a little bit about yours?
Yeah, and so some of it's still a little bit fluid with locations. They will match, though, with the PSAPs. Our goal is to have agents or programmers in the counties programming. In some cases, it'll be multiple locations, as with the counties and the PSAPs. A lot of it follows along with what we did in the soft cut. There will be some changes just because of the adjustment of the schedule. And later year, we want to make sure, especially when we get into the Wasatch Front area, where we did have a lot of outside programming, that we have some internal programming areas. So I'm finalizing that with some of the agencies that are working with us. We will be there programming through sometimes a couple days, sometimes a one day, sometimes a week, as you see on the schedule. We'll have programmers that, again, as we did with the soft cut, that will be able to rove a little bit with some of those stationary radios, and we'll get them programmed. We'll also have a programmer that'll be in the PSAP to take care of those back-end radios. At the end of the cut for the PSAP, they'll finalize and program those back-end radios that are in your PSAPs. We ask that, you know, as we go through this and we finalize communications with your agencies, if you do have, you know, stationary radios that can't be moved, that we identify those with the people that are helping to coordinate our efforts, just so we know where to send people. We appreciate that. In the soft cutover, it seemed to work pretty well. We know that there will be more. With this final cut, the one thing that'll be also a little bit different on our end for programming than it was with soft cut is there'll be other agencies involved, as far as our state agencies, our federal agencies that'll be coming to these sites as well. Or that we'll be programming. So it'll be long days in programming, but our anticipation and our goal is to assure that every radio in the system gets touched during these days that we're there. So looking forward to, like Phil said, moving forward with this.
Yeah, I'll mention that. So on the PSAPs, you know, the date that we have listed there, that's our start date. We plan to go until the resources are basically all converted over and set up. But if we exceed the end date where we have to be in, like, you know, the next county or something like that, the primary team is going to move on. As Mike mentioned, we have a roving team that's kind of a joint team between Mike and I's that we will be sending back to do any sort of like cleanup work or whatever. But once we hit the end date of the next PSAP that we've already gone to, then we sort of have to move on. So we have some insurance, but the schedule's tight, and you know, there's a little bit of wiggle room with cleanup work afterwards, but not a ton. Any questions on schedule before we move on?
Draper.
So we have one question.
Yeah, this is Clint Smith out in Draper. Just a question. I know on the soft cutover, you know, I know we particularly ran into a few instances where there wasn't a program already pre-built for some of our radios. So that, I know that caused some delays, not only for us, but for the people at the site. Do we anticipate those same types of issues in the final cutover, or did the soft cutover give you guys the information you needed to have all of the appropriate programs pre-built so we don't run into some of those same challenges?
Yeah, thanks, Chief. Appreciate that. Yeah, so for the most part, the goal of that was to gather those flash codes. It specifically occurs with the Motorola system and the way that their system works. Their system requires that each personality that has a different flash code have its own personality, if you will. So we have gathered those and we've built as many as we can. We have, as we've gone through this, and we've also been getting other communication from agencies, Motorola started delivering more radios that are going to be on the system. So there will be still some of those that have to be put on the system. In Salt Lake County specifically, Chief, some of the adjustments that we have made is we've actually extended that from the 5 days out to the 9 days so that we have more time to do this. We also, like I said, gathered a lot of those flash codes, so that'll help in the process so we don't have as many of those to build. We've been working with Motorola to help us with the ability to do what we used to do, which is a drag and drop to make those builds a little bit faster. And then those one radios that come on that maybe are a new radio that's just come out, some of those are going to require the additional work on site, but we will be staffing for the last along the Wasatch Front specifically, an additional group of people from L3Harris. We will have at least up to 15 programmers on sites to program. So we've kind of tried to hit it in a couple different ways with what we learned from soft cutover, taking the flash codes, extending the amount of time we have to complete the process with the county, and also additional staffing beyond what we had before.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that.
Okay, good. Any other questions?
Paul Pitts asked if it would help if he sent over code plugs prior to cutover.
If there's one that you know that didn't get touched during soft cutover that has a different flash code, it probably would be helpful. If we get a whole bunch of those, they may get lost in translation. But if you do have a few of those that you know didn't get touched that will help us in that would be fine to send them over.
Mike, sorry, there's another question from Jay Hinton. The question is, will the old Cane 1 and new Cane 1 still be patched until everything has been moved to the final cutover in November? Okay, great.
We can talk about it now. I don't know that we have a ton of detail on it. Our plan is to basically patch those channels together the day before we get into the county or the area where we're cutting over. Then we'll keep that in place, even though the PSAP will be fully converted over by the time we leave. We still plan to keep that in place for one additional PSAP's worth of time. So I guess if I was to look up here and give you an example, Summit would remain patched old system to new system through the end of Wasatch's date. So it would start 10/3 and it would end 10/10 approximately. There are a couple spots in the schedule where that's just not possible with the way everything, with the number of migration rack, I guess you'd say resources and radios that are in the migration rack. There are some spots where that's just not possible. An example of that would be Salt Lake City 911, Salt Lake City VEC. Those two PSAPs require every single interop channel that we have in both racks. So that's 20 full channels just for those two PSAPs. So there's no way for us to leave Salt Lake City 911 patched as we go through VEC. And of course, VEC is our last one. So it really doesn't matter at that point. But there are certain PSAPs where the schedule is tighter than others, and we'll have to cut that short, shorter than we want. But there is some room on both the front end and back end, I think, of pretty much every one of them, with the exception of Salt Lake City 911.
And Andy, to answer your question in the chat, yeah, we'll, like we did before, we'll send those to you so you guys can look at them, go through those options and things that we did before working with you.
Okay. Go ahead and jump to the next slide. This one's yours, I think, right?
Yeah, so as hopefully most of you are aware, this new system does allow encryption for the P25. The statewide, back several years ago when we started working through this process, it was determined by the boards that provide UCA with direction that we would go with a single key encryption. The encryption is already put on a lot of the radios that we have touched. It'll have to be put on. It'll be a process that takes a few seconds to add those to the radios. As for the end user radio, once that encryption is put on there, it's really seamless for them. As long as it's keyed properly, it looks at that talk group and in the system, it decodes that talk group that's encrypted. Keyed radios on the system can play encrypted and unencrypted calls, but if a radio does not have encryption on it and they have an encryption talk group, they will not hear that encryption communication going across the system. It'll come in as garbled. The agencies, as we began to build this process, identified which of those talk groups they wanted to be encrypted. So if you're not sure, the agency should be able to help build that, the PSAPs, or I can help you determine if those are encrypted. Like I said, any radio that's unkeyed cannot play, cannot unencrypt a talk group that's in the system. When the dispatcher patches an encryption channel with an unencrypted channel, that will demote the unencryption on the system. So if they do patch that, there will be some ability to do that. Really, the encryption is on each device in the system. The receiving device either has the proper key to decrypt it or doesn't have the proper key to decrypt it. That decryption is determined to the talk group in the system. And then the system key in the radio or in the PSAP console is what decrypts that information. During the week or weeks of cutover, the channels will be unencrypted on the system. So they will stay unencrypted as we go through the areas. They will not be encrypted until after.
They're effectively unencrypted, right?
Yeah.
So they're encrypted on the P25 side, but everyone should treat them as unencrypted channels.
Maybe
you're getting to that, but.
No, that's good. After the cutover, those channels that have been identified will be encrypted. So let's remember that if you have those in your radio and it does not have encryption, you will stop hearing talking on that channel. If a VHF channel is patched in encryption, the audio is subsequently decrypted in the Pathway Plus gateways that we have on the system, and that so that traffic will come across through the system.
Hey, Mike V, this is Tina. Just to clarify, so when you say after cutover, you mean after we've completed that county cutover, then and we've taken down the migration gateway, then those encrypted talk groups will be encrypted. Is that right?
That's correct, because on the P25 side, it will be encrypted. So once that connection between that, thank you for the clarification. Once that connection between the two are gone, those channels will be unencrypted or encrypted back on the system based off of what has been designed by the agencies and in the system. For those PSAPs out there, some of this was in the training, but just kind of as a refresher, the lock symbol on the top of the channel or the talk group shows that the channel is encrypted. If that lock is open, it's a clear or unencrypted channel. If you see a grayed out, that means that that's not, that channel's not, or that console may not be keyed. So that's something to pay attention to. As transmissions come across, you'll see the different indicators of lights within your PSAP console. Green as unencrypted calls, yellow as encrypted call decoded successfully, and a red is an encrypted call that's unable to decode. The audio is not heard, it's garbled, but you may see that it's trying to transmit on there.
Yeah, I think this one's mine. So I want to talk a little bit about preemption behavior. So the consoles in this system are able to basically preempt any radio that has an ongoing call. The P25 system will essentially vote on which you know device has the higher priority, and the console is going to win every time across the system. So if you're calling radio to radio, and a console preempts an ongoing call, what's going to happen is that every radio that's on the system is going to hear the preempted audio from the console. Everybody's going to hear the console. However, the person that is transmitting won't be heard on any other radios, but will be heard on the console, or will be recorded in the background on the console. So we wanted to point out that this was a nice feature. The logging recorder doesn't record the losing audio. We call that audio the losing audio because it was the audio that the person was transmitting that basically got overridden or preempted. The Symphony console itself has the capability of receiving that losing audio, and it's recorded. And when that occurs, when you go into the console history, you'll see right here in the drop-down menu on the top left where I've got the red box, you'll see that down arrow. You can get into the full history at that point, and you can look for any audio, and you can see that I've got one selected here where we intentionally preempted a radio that's sitting here on the desk in front of me, and it's got that circle with the cross through it, meaning that that is losing audio. And so that audio is recorded. You can see on the right-hand side that it's a WAV file, and that it's able to be played back. So that's the only place in the system where that audio is recorded. So if that occurs and you need to save it off within about 24 hours, that's about the record window on these consoles, and put it somewhere safe.
There's a question in the chat, I believe from Dave Herman, about fire channels and encryption. I'm just double checking, but there were no identified fire-specific talk groups in the system that are going to be secured. So all those should be unencrypted channels. The only time you start getting into some of the encryption is if it's a TAC channel that some of the agencies use. You may find that those TAC channels are for Salt Lake County, Salt Lake City specifically. TAC 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 show secure, but for all the main fire channels, there's not any fire channels identified as encrypted in the system.
All right, we wanted to talk about the emergency button. Motorola and L3Harris have a little bit different philosophy on and slash behavior when clearing emergencies. So we want to talk about the L3Harris console, the Scout consoles. Most of the PSAPs don't have Scout consoles, but you may interact with a group or agency that's, you know, a dispatch location or something like that that has a Motorola Scout console. So we needed to kind of highlight the differences. So I'll run through it real quick. L3Harris Symphony console, it has the ability to declare an emergency or clear an emergency right from the screen. Motorola Scout does not have the ability to declare emergency and does not have the ability to clear the emergency. L3Harris radios can declare the emergency. You can clear the emergency from the menu. You can hold down the button on the top of the radio to clear it. You have the ability to turn off the radio clearing capability within the programming. I don't think we have that anymore, though, but it is its capability. Motorola radios, you can declare the emergency. You can hold down the emergency clear button or emergency button to clear it, and you can also turn off the radio to clear it. Where this could become a potential issue is when you have a Motorola radio in the field, a Motorola Scout console at a dispatch center. The radios must be specifically programmed to clear the emergency for the talk groups that the dispatch center manages. Otherwise, it lodges in the radio core, and you'll have to call UCA to basically get that cleared. So I'm not sure it directly affects anyone here, but that is the, I guess, corner case that you could run into with these devices on the new P25 network. Okay. Tina, I think this is your slide.
This is me. Thank you. So we, the PSAPs already know that UCA purchased all of the P25 consoles for that they currently have installed at their centers. We want to enter into an agreement with the PSAPs so that they understand. So for, I know everyone who is employed today knows who they are, but for future reference, we think it's a wise idea to get into an agreement with each to identify how many consoles they currently have, who owns them, which is UCA. Also, the peripherals that are involved with those, such as the foot pedal, the keyboard, the mice, the monitors. We're going to be gifting the peripherals, if you will. Again, things like the keyboard, the mouse, the foot pedal, monitors, to the PSAPs. And then we, in the agreement, it will state that the PSAPs will then, moving forward, be responsible for the peripherals. So we won't be replacing any monitors or things that are considered or outlined in the agreement as a peripheral. Also, it outlines support, how the support will be managed for the consoles, and then if there's additional type of support that the PSAPs need from UCA, how that will work. And then we also will have some exhibits attached to and referenced in the agreement, the VHF resources that the PSAPs will have us connect to the gateway, the Pathway Plus gateways. Who owns the Pathway Plus gateways, which is UCA, and then who owns the resources, the VHF resources? That's been something that's been a little bit tough to figure out in terms of this process that we've gone through over the past years with the PSAPs as far as who owns the VHF resources. So now that we've gone through that pain and suffering with everyone and have outlined that and have it really listed, we'll have that in the agreement as well, so that just so that for future reference, it's just very clear who's responsible for what resources and what pieces of equipment at the PSAPs. There are several PSAPs that we have extra gateways installed at. We will be removing those probably in the January timeframe after we complete our cutover. So if we have those and you know that they're there, please leave them where they're at. We will come and get them. And then when we have you sign the contract during cutover, we will we'll acknowledge which ones we'll be coming back to get. So I'll send that. We have these individualized per PSAP, obviously, given that there's different resources. So I'll be sending these out to all of you as soon as we get them completed in the next day or two. That will give you time to look over the agreements and have whomever you need to at your agencies look them over so that we can get them signed and sent back to us. So. I think that's it, unless there's any questions on the agreements.
All right. Just want to talk a little bit about the process because there's a lot going on in the aliases. There's a lot that have come in recently that we're trying to keep up to date. We did kind of draw a line in the sand for a minute. Why we did some back-end work in UAS. So if you've sent requests for aliases to the new to the old system over the last 7 days or so, they have not been necessarily updated in both systems. just because we had to do an update to the system, and then we'll go back and continue updating the systems as we move forward. When we get into the cutover process, this is where it starts getting a little complicated, and we want to make sure that things are clean and delivered to the standards that you guys expect as our users. So just wanted to make you aware of some things as we go through and we start programming, and you know, an officer or a firefighter keys up the radio and it has a different alias. We'll have someone there that'll take that information down. There may be a delay in that piece, that data getting delivered to the PSAP through the system. Our plan is to have a person that's here at the UC office or with us on site that's going to spend time during the days updating those as we identify them a couple of times a day is our hope. We hope to have as much as we can updated in the system, you know, within 24 hours after us identifying a need. So we will gather that information on site. We will send that information in intervals back to our individual that's taking care of that, and then we'll work on updating that as quickly as we can. We just wanted to make sure that you're aware that there will be and continue to be a little bit of delay in some of that as we're trying to manage both systems and get all that up and going. The other issue with that is with the ID structure. We've taken some time after our lessons learned in the soft cutover, rebuilt the ID structure in the system to make it a little bit more manageable for both UCA and our agencies, especially those that will be programming for us on the system moving forward. We've identified that each agency will now have a block of IDs and a new agency number assigned to them. As part of that process, we have taken all the serials that we knew belonged to an agency. We put them into the system. We have generated IDs. For those that are waiting, our goal is to get those out to you today. We finally have those ready to go. Where that kind of comes into a problem is if radios are still being out in the field, being shuffled from agency to agency, there's going to be some serial numbers that are in an old agency assigned to an old ID that won't be in the new agency. And so it could cause a delay in getting that radio programmed a little bit as we move those IDs or those serial numbers to different agencies. We ask that as much as possible that those don't get shifted around from this point. We know that agencies are trying to get radios in their hands, and we've had a lot of that. But we just want to try and come out of this, start with the cleanest possible data that we have and with what we've done. We know that those radios are important to you guys and getting those in those hands. So we have kind of put that together already, but just know that if we move those around, there could be some potential problems for the IDs being wrong, assigned to an agency and have to be fixed later on. So we think that this new process and these new IDs, and this goes back to Chief Smith's question about the soft cut order as well. This process will also help us to streamline the time that it takes for a program to program, because they'll have access to IDs a little easier. So we've made some adjustments to that as well.
So to summarize, we're locked on aliases for, let's say, the time frame of one to two weeks, something like that, because we're still uploading all the serial numbers and IDs that are now new to the system. You are locked on shuffling radios until when?
We can't, as much as possible, don't shuffle until we're done with this process so that we can move those in there. As we go through the process and we identify that they need to be moved, we can work through getting those moved to agencies. But yeah, as much as possible through the cutover, if we can stop shuffling any radios to different agencies, that's preferred.
So I think that may have answered Justin's question, potentially in the chat. And then we have another one.
Yes. So Joey, that's the goal and the reason that we need to touch every radio at the end of the, or during this cutover process, is that we will be adding the new IDs into the system. So part of that is our goal is as we go through each area, the week before, or the days, just days prior to that area, the system, which has been purged, the old stuff will be uploaded back into there. So those radio IDs that we had in the radios will work. And then we need to touch every radio again, put the new ID in it, and they'll work as well. Once we leave the area after a couple days, we're going to purge the old stuff and it'll just be the new stuff in the system. And part of the reason behind that is if a radio didn't get touched, we want to make sure that that ID is not working so that it does, so that they know that that radio needs to be touched again.
Yeah, we'll probably, I would guess we'd turn those off about the same time we pull down the interop rack. That's not a hard deadline yet, but that's kind of where we're thinking. Looks like we have another question.
There's two. Did you guys? Okay. Did you get the question from Justin? He wants to know if it's the same way of updating IDs. Well, his question just disappeared. As we find and reassign radios, is the email the best way?
I think how we answered that was that we're on a lock for shuffling radios until end of cutover.
Hey, JG, that's your answer. And then Andy Kuka asks if we have already assigned new IDs to serial numbers, or does it have to happen at cutover?
No, that data has been uploaded, and we generated that in the last couple of days. So we have the serial number and the new ID generated, so we can get that to you.
And then Logan has a question. Have new radios being delivered between now and cutover? Can we get legacy IDs for those? Go ahead, Mike.
So we're pretty much at the point where our whole team will be on there. So programming those to the old system, we're avoiding that as much as possible. We know that there's needs out there. Agencies have been waiting for radios for a long time. So once our team starts, though, we will not have the capabilities of programming radios to the old system. So we're kind of at that cutting point where we have to kind of cut that part as well. There was one up there by Bev. Are there radios that won't be able to update to the new system? If we have older radios, release them. So it's a couple things on that, Bev, to check in your system is they have to have, for Motorola's, the Astral P25. They have to be P25 capable on the system if it hasn't been identified already. There's a list of radios that are P25 compatible on our webpage. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more here. Do you want me to do now?
We can go back.
We'll go back to that a little bit.
Okay.
So, Mike, there's one more question from Chris Armstrong. If a new officer starts, are we able to assign radios to them with a new alias now? Yes, in 2 weeks is the answer. Is that right? Two-ish weeks?
We'll be able to. For the legacy IDs?
Yeah.
They're assigning a new ID once we start programming is not capable on just because we're going to be in the midst of programming. So any new radio that comes out as we start to programming it to the old system is just not feasible to get IDs out and program them to agencies.
Okay. I think that answers Logan's question too. If it doesn't, Logan, let us know. Okay. Go ahead.
So those of you that have purchased L3Harris radios, as we've worked through the system and used the radios, we've kind of come across the noise cancellation. We've had a chance to play with it a little bit. This really is a feature that's designed for those heavy, heavy noise areas. It's not a feature that you necessarily want turned on all the time. It does have a potential of drowning out your regular speaking voice if you're not talking loud enough or direct into the mic. Each of the radios in the Harris system do have the capabilities of turning this feature on and off within the menu structure as the options, and that's how we set it up so that you have that ability. So that if you do find yourself using a Harris radio and you're out in the field, you're under a rotor wash or something else, and they're having a hard time hearing you or communicating, you can actually go in and turn that on specific for the radio. But we suggest that unless you're in a situation like that or know you're going to be in a situation like that, that you avoid utilizing this noise cancellation feature just because it can drown out your voice. In this slide, it just kind of talks about the process of doing that. In the Harris radios, there's the center button that takes you into the menu. There's a system setting gear that you can go into and allows you to scroll through the different audio settings. And this will be included in there. So we wanted to hit that because we did notice as we started using it, and we actually programmed some of our radios to have that as a startup feature, that it does have the tendency to drown out your voice if you're not speaking direct into the mic. Here's a back to the non-compatible B25. On our website, there's a list of approved radios on the system. Some of the radios are capable. The older radios are capable, and some of them are not. It's important with that you check the radios to assure that they are P25 phase one or preferably phase two compatible. It's not required to be phase two, but it is required to be phase one to actually communicate on the system. You can check that by the serial number, contacting your vendor. If you have programming capabilities, you can read the radio and look to see if it has the Astro P25 feature in it. We, as UCA, don't do those updates or upgrades to the P25 system. That is a vendor-specific upgrade and cost that is required. So if you have an old radio that you're not sure the best to be, check those two ways to see if it is. Each radio is different. We found that out during soft cutover. Some of you know, as we went through the soft cutover process, some of the new radios that they thought had it didn't have it, and so we were able to send them back. Each radio really should be checked if it hasn't been checked or touched already, to assure that it has those features in there. Again, working with your vendor is the best way to do that. If you come to programming at the day of cutover and it's not P25 compatible, there's really no way that we can program it to the new system because it just does not work on the new system. So know that if a radio comes through that's not compatible, that we will not program it at that time.
Mike V, let's see. There's a question from Nicholas Haskin. He wants to know if we can program a soft key for the noise cancellation on-off feature on the L3H radios.
We think so, but we want to check for sure.
Yeah, we believe we can, but we'll double check. They have a lot of ability to program all their soft keys, so we'll double check. All right. One of the things that, as we started talking about this, as Tina and others have had conversations with agencies and PSAPs and end users throughout the system, there's still some confusion and some knowledge that needs to be put out there as far as the changes in the talk group nomenclature across the state and what they do, where they'll be, and how they'll associate to the system. So we wanted to kind of just hit this again for the benefit of all of us as users to the system. Back when several years ago, when our advisory groups were meeting, it was determined that we needed to extend the regional capabilities across the state. And so we've gone from a 6-region layout to an 8-region layout across the state. As part of that, they renamed the talk groups or the regions based off of where they were at and what they felt fit for those regions. So this is kind of a visual of that, so that you have it and have a reminder. We're going from the North Salt Lake, Northeast, Southwest, Northeast, Southeast, and South Central regions to our Bear River region, which is our Box Elder, Cache, and Rich counties, our Wasatch region, which will be our Weber, Davis, Morgan. Ochre is our new region for the Tooele and Salt Lake area. Mountain Land is the new Summit, Wasatch, Utah, and Juab, and that's one of the biggest changes, as you can see from the previous one. And part of that was change in dispatch services, but part of that was also just a need seen by those agencies and the advisory groups. Our Northeast region is still our Basin, Daggett, Duchesne, and Uinta. Our central region, Millard, San Pete, Sevier, Paiute, and Wayne. Southeast region, Carbon, sorry that didn't get changed, Emory, Grand, and San Juan. And then our Southwest region is Beaver, Iron, Garfield, Washington, and Kane. Regional talk groups are meant for interoperability for agencies as fast-moving events are coming across into their areas, as they need to have a quick means of communication and coordination between counties and regions on events or things that are happening. Really, that's what they're meant for. They're meant to help you to interoperate at a quick moment's notice as you go throughout the system. Each of these regions will be laid out in your zones, in zones 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15 are all the interop zones for most agencies. Some agencies have opted to move those around, but for the most part, that's where they're at. We laid them out by each region, two regions in each zone, so that it kind of split them out. In most cases as well, in your radios, we continue the process of programming your region in the channel 16 of your radio, so that you know that no matter what, if you're in an incident where you can reach your radio but you can't see your radio, you could always, you know, quickly turn to channel 16 and get communication with a PSAP. Our PSAPs are very good at listening to these regional channels and paying attention to communication that's happening and trying to respond to agencies quickly on these channels. So that's kind of a little bit of a fail-safe in our emergencies across the state. These are just some local events, you know, things that are happening fast. Coordination between a PSAP and an agency. It's good to have these as well as you're traveling through. If you have an agency that's traveling through the state or an officer that's traveling through the state, especially because of the donut approach for talk groups, it's a good channel for them to be able to communicate with a PSAP if they come across an incident across the state within their radios. As we've all used the system over the past 20 plus years, we have gotten used to having those 16 event channels that are assigned for interoperability in the system. We recognized as agencies across the state that just really is not enough and was not enough as the years got more and more users came onto the system. So as the advisory group met, we determined that we would break that out as well into regions. And we went away from event channels being a statewide interoperability resource and moved over to regionalized TAC channels that will be in everybody's radios as well. Each region has 5 tactical channels assigned to them. They will be labeled the 2 initials. So like for Bear River, BR TAC 1 through 5, WF TAC 1 through 5 for Wasatch Front, etc. These talk groups are again used for communications of ongoing events within a county where you're bringing in resources. If you have a wildland fire where you're bringing in outside state resources or county resources, if you're having some other large event where you need that channel because they don't have your talk group, these are great.
We lost you, Mike.
Hang on, everyone. Let me go see what's going on in the conference room. Dan, maybe we can get them to flip to your talk groups or your slides. Hang on.
You guys hear us?
Yes, we understand.
Yes.
Okay. Evidently, the camera system disconnected, so. Okay, I think we're back.
All right. Did you guys hear me through the TAC channels? Make sure.
No, that's where we lost you.
We got through most of it, though.
Okay, just to kind of recap. Each region will now have 5 TAC channels assigned to them. These will replace the event channels 1 through 16 on the system, and they're used for interoperability when you're bringing outside resources into the system outside of your normal area to do interoperability events. Okay, and extending beyond that, some of the other communication was, what are these channels in the system? What do they mean? A lot of the talk groups that we were provided were provided by your agencies. About a year ago, we did some restructuring to the system and allowed for some changes in the talk group names. And so we just wanted to kind of hit a few of these that have come up and questions about them and what they may be used for. A lot of these are agency defined. And so we ask that you ask your agencies what they're going to be used for if you're not sure what they are used for. But the basics are there that we wanted to kind of hit. We extended that ability for interoperability within counties by adding event talk groups within counties. Some counties do have five and some have a little more depending on the size of the county. Again, these are for you to use for interoperability, communications within your counties, for events, parades, other things where you're talking with multiple groups of agencies, within agencies, outside agencies within your county that maybe, you know, don't have your day-to-day talk groups because they're restricted, but they're helping you with the event. So events are for that. Those are now countywide instead of statewide interoperability channels. Beyond that, a lot of agencies have identified operational talk groups or ops groups. These are specific to agencies and their use. Some of them remained as ops channels 1 through 15, and some of them specified, as you can see down below, what those actually were going to be utilized for. Again, these are PSAP agency interoperability or specialty groups that are used at the discretion of the agency and the PSAP for what they've designed them for. All of our law groups are now labeled law. In most cases, they didn't change on that. It says law. Fire as well. These are agencies, both agency-specific groups for your communication on a day-to-day basis. C2C or car-to-car channels are, again, agency-specific talk groups. These are really meant for taking traffic off of your main channels to have those conversations about things that you don't need to go over the air or don't concern a PSAP or another user that you need to talk to. These are usually agency-specific, and they're usually, you know, split between discipline as well, fire and police. Sometimes it's additional, you know, administration car-to-car channels in some cases. We've seen some others split out based for UHP by sections, those kind of things. In some cases, these talk groups are restricted of who can have them. So if it's requested and restricted, you may see that come back towards you. In addition, a lot of you have identified specialty talk groups, your SWAT channels, your drug channels, your NARC or narcotics channels in your task force. Again, these are agency specified channels. You'll see in the structure, if you haven't already and been looking at those or had a part in this, that each of these talk groups are now based off of the county identifier. So most of them are the first two letters of the county or the PSAP. So UT for Utah County, and then an underscore in the name of the talk group, or SL for Salt Lake County. And that's statewide. And that's to kind of minimize some of the issues that we've seen in the past where maybe an agency has, you know, the same talk group name, but they're within a different area. That allows us to separate that based off of the location of that talk group and where it'll be used.
Hey, Vinandal.
Yes.
There's a question in the chat. Will agencies outside my region have my region's TAC channels on their radios? Can you talk about the donut approach and how the new answer that and then talk about the donut approach? Thanks.
Perfect. Yeah, so as far as the TAC channels, those Bear River TAC, Mountainland TAC, Central TAC, those will be in all radios. We've tried to put them in every radio, like I said, in zones 9 through 15 are all the interop channels in most cases. Some agencies, like I said, have moved those around. We do put those in there because those are all interoperability, statewide interoperability resources, and so you should have those in every radio. And hopefully they're in those identified zones. And if not, the agencies can identify where they've asked to have those moved to. In some cases, they've moved them up a little bit or they've intertwined them with some of their other talk groups. And again, that's to make that interoperability capable across there. So they will have all the talk groups in your radios. When you start getting to events and ops and the law channels and that's where it becomes specific to the personality and it's not necessarily in your every agency around you's
radio.
That was based off of what personality was submitted for programming. So in some cases, the event groups and those will not be in there. Some have opted to do that. The donut approach, as Tina talked about, is, again, specified law, fire, car-to-car channels. They will work within the area that you're at. So if you're in Kane County, you're, you know, the Kane Law 1s and 2, Fire 1 and 2, they'll work within Kane areas. The talk groups are assigned specifically to towers across the system. It is limited on the number of towers that can be programmed into that. But what we've done beyond that is we've extended it to a donut approach, if you will. And so knowing that you guys work in some cases, you know, an event goes outside the county, we wanted to make sure you still had that communication. The donut approach extends those talk groups out to towers in surrounding agencies. So for Kane, for instance, Washington, Iron, Garfield, San Juan, there are towers that have been identified that you may rove to or that may come into play in a situation. It allows those talk groups to rove onto those towers and still communicate. As some of the testing that we've done, we've found that this extends in a lot of cases, you know, because these towers that we have in Utah sit up on top of mountaintops, that gives us a large footprint for our coverage area for those towers. So it does really extend out quite a distance into a lot of the areas, the surrounding areas. But once you get out that outside of that donut, if you will, you won't be able to drag a Kane Law channel up into Juab County. It just won't let it. And so that's where utilizing interoperability channels and talk groups, regional talk groups, comes into play and is important. There are some, those talk groups are allowed on the system statewide. And so they're allowed to be able to kind of go from tower to tower across the system. The reason that this was determined back in the early days of this project was just because of the issues that we've had dragging traffic and lowering sites. We've had in the past some areas that are minimal in the number of sites, and the sites can get busied out fast if we're dragging traffic from one end of the state to the other. And so when this approach was determined, you know, several years ago, that was the goal, is to be able to do that and minimize the busying out of the sites for those agencies that may have some minimal coverage in a certain area.
And then as far as that goes, Mike, if you and Phil want to talk about there, we're going to try and go out and drive test a lot of this and just validate that the site adjacency and the donut approaches is set up in the back end as it needs to be. But if there's changes or tweaks that we need to make, that's all in the back end. We would not need to go out and reprogram the radios. And if there are other tweaks that we need to make, or you are not affiliating with the site or something, Phil, I think, is going to be addressing who to call when there's problems. But this is one of the things that would be something you could call us and say, hey, this is where I was, and it's not affiliating appropriately or something like that. So we're going to obviously try and have all of that worked out before we cut. But there will probably, you know, be some areas that we need to tweak. And again, if Phil and V, if you can confirm that all of that will be done on the back end. So we would not need to, it would not require us to come out and reprogram all the radios again.
You can confirm that, right? Yeah. In general, our plan, like Tina said, is to, it's not a coverage drive test. It's more of a like site adjacency and system, I guess you'd call it system handoff, right, from site to site. That's sort of the things that on a new system you're trying to iron out. And so, you know, starting next week, we're sending folks out. We've been operating on the L3 Harris system. Our technician group's been operating on the L3 Harris system now for probably, I think, 2 months now. And so we've already started to iron out some of those details, but we've intentionally delayed for everything to be wrapped up, perform our core testing, and then as soon as that's done, we'll commence a more intensive test of those types of things as we drive.
Hey, Phil, can you answer, or you or Mike answer? Cordine has a question. We have a fix for the bat channel to be able to talk from agency to agency, i.e. console to console.
Yeah, good question. Thanks, Cordian. Yeah, thank you. We've actually went through and identified talk groups that will be labeled for the PSAP. Each of the PSAPs in the state will have that talk group and availability to them. And that does allow you, Cordian, to be able to talk from PSAP to PSAP. And we did that based off the PSAP, so you knew who you were communicating to. There are a few additional ones that are still in there, the system, for some of the larger counties and areas that they identified again. But each of those PSAP talk groups will be, for instance, Price PSAP. We'll have one that's called Price PSAP. And those will be available on your consoles, and that will be exactly for that communication from PSAP to PSAP that's used daily. I know that, you know, Richfield and Utah County use that on a daily basis, and Salt Lake and or the TOC and the agencies they work with use that on a regular basis. So we have fixed that, identified it, and that'll be part of that last load that we talked about that'll be pushed out to the consoles for final cut over.
No radios on those, right?
Right, and these are talk groups that are specific to console to console. They're not to be put on, or they're not put on any radios out in the field. It's just for PSAP to PSAP communication. Those channels are not encrypted, no.
And they do not go over the air.
And they do not go over the air. They just go through the system.
Yep.
Jody Richens has a question.
Yeah, his question is, Jody Richens, how will channel dragging affect agencies who use 1 to 2 talk groups through multiple regions for daily operations?
Yeah, so there are talk groups that have been identified, Jody, that are allowed in multiple regions or statewide. And so those are identified by those agencies and those groups that move through that. Some of your talk groups are that way. So there are some capabilities to allow that on some of the talk groups, but we've kept that to some of those agencies that, you know, we know travel day to day throughout the entire system.
And then Jennifer wants to know if on the PSAP to PSAP talk groups, will they be able to record them on the logging recorder?
We're not recording them on our side, but unless Tina has anything other, I don't see a problem with it being recorded on their side if they want to add that into their recording group.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, we also do like an intercom between the state agencies. So
you guys actually have some of those. Yeah, you guys already have some of those. They're DPS comm channels, I believe.
Okay, so we'll have the bat phone and the DPS comm channels.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Mike, Logan wants to know, he said it looks like the region, or they said it looks like the region call channels have been removed from the consoles. Did they get changed, and how, and how do they need to be re-added?
So they've dropped from your Symphony consoles?
Yeah, as part of the agency and ID remapping, I would expect a lot of that to be in shambles at this point. So that's sort of expected. It'll get built back up quickly when it does come, and we'll finalize everything with you guys. We can probably reconstruct the screen configuration you had so you don't have to redo everything. But some of those channels will have gone missing.
And we can send an email to ESAPs once we've locked down there's been a ton of back-end work being done right now. Phil has just started doing the testing with our L3H engineer. And so we can send an email out to the PSAPs with regards to when you're going to see the announcement groups and all of that. I see Paul Wilden just asked a question about that. So we can definitely send something out to let you guys know that it's ready for you guys to finalize your new Symphony console.
Announcement group time frame. You know, officially the plan is by cutover, but we'll probably have it a little bit earlier, and we'll let you know if that does happen.
And Micah, yeah, the console to console ones are kind of like your intercom channel, the one that you guys talk back and forth between Central and Richfield today. Those channels are the ones that it replaces.
Just to verify, so we might not get those announcement groups until we cut over and go live, because I'd like to train before we go live with those announcements groups, especially since we have some, we're going to use quite a bit of announcement groups.
We
will get them.
Sure. Yeah, let me go on mute and maybe I can give you a little bit better idea. One second.
Okay.
But yeah, Cody, and that's a huge change for you guys. So depending on if Phil comes back and says otherwise, I'll go on mute and go and we'll get a different answer. But we understand why that's so important. That is going to be a big change for the PSAPs for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Okay, we've discussed we want to target next week for your PSAPs specifically and any other PSAPs that have a priority on those. And our goal will be to try and get all of them next week.
Awesome. I know someone emailed Melanie today and said they have a couple more that they want to add. If there's any changes, now would be the time to send those emails in on those announcement groups. So.
Yeah, they're a bit of work. So we do need to know about them. If there's anything, you know, we're supposed to be locked up on those.
Yeah. I just want to say thanks for making that a priority. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, not a problem.
Okay, yeah, Regina, I see your email or your message, and we'll definitely make all of our PSAPs the priority. So not everyone's going to be using them, to my knowledge, but we'll definitely put out a PSAP. We'll put out something to the PSAP club when those are done so that you guys know and can add them to your consoles, and then you can start training on them. We get that the training is going to be key on that element of it, so. Everyone will be prioritized for sure. Okay, Mike, go ahead.
All right, next slide. Oh, this one's mine. Okay, we wanted to highlight that we've eliminated lockdown channels as they previously have been. The way the P25 radios work, they avoid the use of any site that is disconnected from the radio core. And they'll prefer any core connected sites that are within range. P25 sites that disconnect from the radio core will still continue to trunk locally, even though the radios are avoiding them, so that if there are any subsequent failures, then there's still a site around. We'll talk about that in a couple bullets. But simulcast sites are programmed to go dark. Basically, they shut down, with the exception of the Sardine simulcast. And that's because where we have simulcast sites, with the exception of Sardine, they all basically overlap in coverage. Sardine Canyon is a little bit of a unique case in that there's no overlapping site, even though that's part of a simulcast. So that one has a little bit different behavior. Essentially, what happens is the channels get split up between the two sites, and that's kind of how that occurs. So what does that all mean? Lockdown channels and lockdown procedure, as you guys have traditionally used it at the PSAP, are not needed for areas where there's redundant coverage. So if you have more than one site in town that can reach, you know, the majority of your population or area, there's no need to have a lockdown channel or procedure. If there is an area where you only have one site available, then radios are going to affiliate with that site as a last-ditch effort. So if they don't have sites that that are core connected, then they will attach as a last-ditch effort to that, we'll call it orphaned, or a site that's an island, regardless of whether it's connected to the radio core. Okay, we wanted to talk real quickly about backup radios. So we presented four options in January. This is kind of just a status slide and a expectation slide, but Melanie Crittenden collected the decisions on which option you chose as far as backup radios are concerned. We're expecting that the PSAP will have those backup solutions installed prior to us getting there, and that's so that like the last bullet says, if it's needed for us to come program those backup or logging recorder radios, that'll be our final step in the cutover. I guess I'll mention, you know, if you chose advanced backup radio, we're currently preparing the console configuration for those. The hardware aspect, there's two cables. They're really easy to connect. It's just a USB and an Ethernet cable. And those are connected and up and running, at least the link between the console and the radio. But the radio itself has to be installed and up and running and programmed the way you want so that that's ready to go. So I just wanted to throw that out there that we are expecting that those are installed at time of cutover so that you guys do have a backup scenario. Okay. Wanted to touch on the Beyond status and kind of what we're doing. UCA has collected user information from, I believe, all agencies. Is that right, Tina?
Everyone that I talked to and granted licenses to was sent a link. So if they submitted their information, we have it. If they didn't, I don't have it. So.
Okay. So we have a good list of basically users that are going to use the phone or the PC to connect to Beyond. We are in the process of generating IDs and passwords for those, and they'll be available approximately at the time of cutover when we're in your area. As for the radios are concerned, the radios have the ability to roam onto LTE and Wi-Fi and use Beyond in that respect. Because that requires specific programming either to the LTE or in the case of Wi-Fi, it requires, you know, entering in the Wi-Fi username and password for whatever Wi-Fi that you're going to be in range of. We're basically asking to delay that until Q1 of 2025. It's the extra amount of programming that we're trying to avoid right in the middle of programming, you know, 30,000 radios across the state. But we do believe in general the need for Beyond is mostly phone PC centric. So we're hoping that, you know, addresses it for the near term anyways. When we do get you the username and password for Beyond, I wanted to highlight some of the steps. So first step would be you'll get the application on Google Play or on the Apple App Store. Once it's installed, you'll see a screen like under the number one picture there. You'll click Network Settings. We have blanked out the server addresses, but we'll be giving those out. You'll be giving an ID. That ID is bogus, basically. But we'll give you data to basically fill in those credentials, and you'll be able to enter that in. You'll save the settings, and that's really all it is for configuration. Once you're up and running with Beyond, this is what Beyond looks like. You can see up in the corner, there's a menu button that will allow you to get in and change talk groups, look at the map. On the left-hand side, you can see that there's that microphone button. You can either push there in that button or you can push in the bottom strip, and it will key up on the talk groups that's shown there. In this case, it's a patch channel that shows P65123. In the case of a real talk group, it would show the name of the talk group. And that's the channel that you'd be keying up on. If you do click the menu button and you want to change talk groups, you can just click on the groups. Groups sub item. It'll take you in there and allow you to select any talk group that's available to your radio profile, basically the donut approach for your area. And you can just select that. That will change the talk group, and then you can back out and PTT on it. Also, Beyond has the capability of mapping users. And so anybody that's using Beyond that has GPS enabled, either on their phone or in the case of a radio in the long term, once those are online, then you can go in and basically see where users are and where they're PTTing from. You do have the ability to deny the GPS capability to the app. So if you don't want your location to be seen, you can just hit no to that, and Beyond will not have access to your location on your phone. Okay. Dan, do you want to go ahead and talk about this slide?
Yeah, switching gears beyond to expansion sites. I apologize. I'm having a problem with my camera today, so you don't get to see my smiling face. Here's a list of the 25 expansion sites that we've been working on tirelessly for the last couple of years. Tina had a lofty goal of having all of these done by cutover, and currently we have 23 of those completed. We have, as you can see from the list, we've focused a lot on Southern Utah and Central Utah. Argyle is actually in Duchesne County. It's, for those that are familiar, it's on Highway 191, where we traditionally have not had coverage. That is a what we refer to as a greenfield site. It basically was built from the ground up. Where we can co-locate with other users on an existing site, we will absolutely take that, because it shortens the availability time that it takes to get coverage in a certain area. But a lot of these were built from the ground up. Let's see. You're going to find that there's going to be a lot of improved coverage in San Juan County. And traditionally, that has been a county with the least amount of coverage. We have Cedar Mesa. We've got the Navajo Mountain Clinic. We've also got some future sites that we're currently looking at to provide additional coverage to San Juan. Go ahead and flip to the next slide there, Bill. Bill, I can take it over if I need to. Perfect. This is just a simple collage of some of the sites that we have built and are building. There is, fortunately, tons of pictures, but unfortunately not enough slides to share them all with. go ahead and flip to the next one, Phil. Okay, the last two remaining sites we have, Knox Peak in Millard County and Robbins Lake in Sevier County. Knox Peak in Millard County is going to provide a tremendous amount of coverage that was only previously provided by VHF out in the basically the West Desert. So we're really excited about this. It has an amazing footprint, and these pictures are of just a few days ago. So the one for Notch Peak on the left, that was as of about a week ago. These two sites will be completed. They are scheduled to be completed by cutover. Robbins Lake in Sevier County overlooks the majority of the valley, and it covers all of Highway 50, where we have not had coverage previously between Richfield, Salina, Richfield, and Scipio. There is one site I was going to mention that we were really happy to get completed. It's a greenfield site. It's called Coal Mountain Ranch. It overlooks Salina Canyon. I know that'll make a lot of people in Sevier County and Salina, the Salina area, very happy that they'll have coverage in the majority of that canyon where they've not had it previously. And I think I don't have another slide there, do I, Phil? I think that's the last one. I didn't talk very long. If there's any questions about some of these sites, feel free to ask them.
All right, Dan, I'll take back the words I said about you while I was on mute.
Okay.
Just kidding. All right. Day of cutover process. I guess I'll take this one, and Mike, you can jump in with any elements that you wanted to talk about. But we kind of wanted to give the high-level 10-step plan for PSAPs and kind of what to expect the day of cutover. There are probably 50 sub-steps that we're tracking and on checklists and wrap-up items and all sorts of things that are like playing into all this. But in general, this is what our plan is. So the day prior to cutover, we are planning on testing the interop gateway and ensuring that it connects the primary talk groups between the P25 system and the legacy 800 system. So that list has already been established and sent to L3Harris, and we have radios programmed up and the racks are currently being built. Our plan is to test those this week. And then again, what we're going to do is the day prior, we'll basically flip the knob on those radios that are in that rack to the main channels that are in your area. And that'll connect the P25 and the legacy. The goal of that is to basically support programming such that P25 radios and legacy 800 radios can interoperate all through the period of programming. So you might have some people on the legacy system, some people on the new system, but they should be able to communicate seamlessly across that rack.
And that communication gateway is limited to what's been provided by our PSAPs on their priority and need of channels and talk groups. So it is limited in what channels will be connected in the background, but it is meant to make sure that the main day-to-day operation stays functional.
Okay. So when we arrive at the PSAP, we're saying tentatively start at 8 a.m. If a PSAP has a specific request to start later or earlier, we can support that. But, you know, for the most part, we're going to try and stick to the 8 a.m. The first 15 minutes of the PSAP work will basically be a daily stand-up. So we'd like to meet with, the PSAP manager, director, any leads that we have in-house that day. And additionally, we're going to need the support of any IT or radio staff that the PSAP deems necessary to be there. So it may be that, you have IT radio staff that, every time UCA and L3Harris have been there, we've had them there. We just like them there again on the final day of cutover to support any sort of issues that come up or needs. If you don't have a radio person or IT staff that are needed or you feel like that's not a need, then that's fine. We can proceed without. And in a lot of cases, the situation isn't complex enough to even need IT radio staff there. If there's not a lot of VHF there, it's a kind of boilerplate configuration or a very small PSAP, then we definitely know our role and how to do what we do. So about that same time, programming at the field location commences. So that's also 8 a.m. You'll want to check the schedule because various agencies schedule various buildings at different times. And so that's a constraint that, we'll have on us as a team. At some point after that, we'll start bringing the new Symphony consoles online. As Tina highlighted, UCA is providing the initial set of monitors, keyboard, and mice, with the exception of many PSAPs have chosen to not use the monitors that we've provided. They have their own monitors on, varied desks or desks that go up and down, and or they have big, display walls that are on each position. And that's okay and understood. The thing that we'll need to be sure of is that if you are providing your own monitors as a PSAP, that you have the cabling to support a blade display port. So down in the bottom right-hand side, the console takes a display port, a cable port, whatever you want to call it. And so just make sure that you have a cable that routes to your, display that is display port on one end and whatever connector needs to be on the other end to support your monitor. If you have questions, reach out on that. We can probably give some guidance on it. So we'll bring up the consoles, kind of do an initial check on them, and then we'll start moving dispatchers to the Symphony consoles. When we move to the new console, we'll also bring the radio arbitration / call director, two different names for the same thing. We'll move that at that point so that the phone access will be maintained.
Hey, Phil?
Yeah.
Cordine would like to know if they're using their own monitors, are they responsible for setting up their cable?
Yes, absolutely. That's what we're trying to communicate here, is that if you've got your own monitor, I don't know what's on your end, but I do know what's on our end, and that's a display port. We'll have some adapters and some cables, but we may not have exactly what you need. So we'd ask that if you are using your own monitors, that you have that worked out.
Micah has a question.
Micah's question is, did we ever figure out the USB on the back being disabled, have to plug KB mouse into front of console?
I believe you have to plug it into the front. Yeah, it has to be plugged in the front. The USB ports on the back are special purpose for foot switches, AVR, that sort of thing. All right, so at that point, at step five, we'll have on Symphony consoles and some dispatchers on legacy Motorola. The reason why we have some on both and we don't just do a straight cutover or something like that is, one, to maintain service, and two, we've also got VHF resources that we have to that have to roll over, and that's an either or situation. Basically, once we roll that VHF resource to the new P25 system, you need to have a dispatcher on the P25 system to be able to use that resource. So PSAPs that have a lot of VHF resources and use them on a daily basis, that is it's a critical piece, and we'll have to orchestrate that. And so, as we meet in the daily standup on that first day, that's something that we'll have to work out. What dispatchers move when, and what P20 or what VHF resources move with them to maintain service. Then we'll slowly roll those out across the day, testing out each of the VHF resources. At the end of step seven, we've got everybody on Symphony consoles. We'd ask that at some point after that, we have a person present that's responsible for packing up the legacy console and sort of moving it out of the way. That's one of the things that we encountered when we went through Softcut, was that since the Symphony console wasn't the primary console at that point, obviously the mice and the keyboard didn't reach. So probably keeping that console where it's at right now is likely not a great option for your PSAP. And so it probably needs to be moved up to the desk or routed through the cable trays, the flex chains, in a lot of cases. And so I think part of that's going to be moving the legacy console out of the way so that can occur. Step nine, basically, as we're wrapping up and we're comfortable with the VHF and the Symphony configuration and everything appears to be working, we'll go ahead and transition to programming the backup radios and the recorder radios. One piece to this is that we realize that the name that's in your local recorder likely is not correct for the new talk group name. So on that day, maybe the piece, I'm not sure who makes those changes for each PSAP, but maybe you have an IT expert, or maybe you have to call in a vendor to get those names changed, but you'll likely want your local recorder changed to reflect the new talk group names at that point. Do you have anything on that you wanted to hit? I know you built some of the bullets.
No, yeah, I think it's just important to know that while those radios that are there and reprogrammed, or new ones that you've put into program for recording, will still be punched down and just reprogrammed to the new system, You know, they will be recording, but when you go to pull those for your records requests, if you haven't worked with a vendor to adjust those naming, it may be a little more difficult for you to find, recreate those events that you have to pull for records. So just something to remember, part of this process. We didn't want, as we were talking through this, I didn't want to make sure that you guys didn't look past that and fear that you weren't getting recordings. So.
Yeah, and then the last bullet on here is, you know, the end of day meeting. At the end of each day, we'd like to hold a meeting. This one's a little bit longer, a half hour. This is where we're going to, you know, sign checklists, make sure that everything's working, assess, you know, what sort of things are still outstanding, and then you know, move on to the, and then prepare basically for the next day. Doesn't mean that we won't, that we'll stop working at 4:30. It may be that we have to, you know, go well past 4:30 to continue working on things, but we do want to hold a meeting for sure at 4 to 4:30, just to coordinate, you know, today's activities, the day of activities, and tomorrow's activities. And if we're leaving the PSAP, it'll be things like, you know, who's coming in to address any sort of outstanding issues that there are, and when that's supposed to occur,
as well as programming. Field programming will continue on based off the schedules that we work with the agencies and the areas to do. So that field programming may go later into the night as well. So we'll continue that work on our side as well.
Okay.
So it's fair to say, I think it's safe to say that the public safety community is a pretty tight-knit community. Everybody talks to everybody. Everybody knows everybody. And I think it's also safe to say that as a state agency, we're probably the only one that has the easiest access to our executive director. I can't think of any other agency I can pick up the phone and talk to the executive director. However, that is great, but that also creates an issue when oftentimes we'll have an agency or a stakeholder with an issue with a site or with a radio in their area, and they will skip our on-call number and just reach out to somebody in the executive management. Although that is really convenient, it skips a very important step in the chain. It also disrupts, it oftentimes disrupts the whatever the executive director or the other management is doing at that time. Our main two sources to report an issue are the same as they've always been and will continue to be this way going forward. For urgent, absolutely urgent issues, sites down, you've got consistent noise, something that's disrupting your daily communications, call our on-call technician number. We have Kirsten Martinez. She is our radio coordination, resources coordination manager. She is available all through the day. We switch to Richfield at night, and so somebody can always be reached. If the issue isn't urgent, you just need to, you just want to report something with the system, or you need to talk to somebody about something to do with the communication system in your area, feel free to get on to our support page and just submit a form. Now, I know that the process that we have now with Regroup, where we have been sending out text messages and emails, has helped the information get out a lot better than it has over the years. So hopefully between that and the clarification with this will help us moving forward. We're really trying to emphasize using these two avenues, because as we go with this new system, there are going to be things that crop up that we're not familiar with, that people in the management may not be familiar with. And we need to be able to log those issues or whatever it is, so that it can be recorded and dispatched properly. So anyway, we would appreciate helping us in this effort. Thank you.
Yeah, I guess I'll just hit one point on this. We do have people that support that will submit urgent issues to the non-urgent support ticket, and then we don't see them to the next day, and then they're upset that we didn't get to it. So I suppose if you know you don't get an answer out of the on-call number, which we very much strive to answer that 24/7, and have a messaging system and whatnot that's attached to that. If for some reason you don't, then that's the point to basically escalate it through someone you know, I guess. But we don't anticipate that happening, and we don't want that to happen.
And just to add a little bit more too, if you reach out to one of the team members that you work with or work with regularly, you know, we may direct you back to this number. And it's not that we're trying to be, you know, pushy or rude or anything like that. It's just that we want to make sure that, as Dan mentioned, that these things are getting tracked and recorded. So you may get that message back from us while we're all out there in the field. So know if you reach out to us and we don't respond quickly, we may just send a request to reach out to these other people.
Okay. Looks like there's two things in the chat. Please note that the support desk after hours in Richfield is not PSAP Richfield. That is very much true. It's a separate area. The only way to get to Richfield after hours is through our UCA hotline, 801-840-4216. Paul is asking, can you change the name of the page on call tech to something that doesn't sound as if it's paging the on call tech 24/7? I'm not sure I'm following. This phone will ring their phone 24/7.
For the non-urgent one.
For the urgent line.
Yeah. I have a phone tree, Paul,
I see what he's saying.
Yeah, it goes to Kirsten first, and then we have an afternoon RCM, and then there's a couple hours where it's the on-call tech, or it goes to our support desk that's not Richfield PSAP.
We would appreciate you putting that request through our page on-call tech, please.
All right, Dan.
Right, okay.
So Paul is pointing out that the non-urgent is through the page on-call tech landing page. I'm not sure if we want to change the name of that right before cut or not. But we'll think through that, Paul.
There you go. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'll cover this. Let me ask Tina, do you want to go first on your topic or do you want me to cover this one?
Yeah, let's wrap it up.
Okay. So what's next for everyone? We are requesting a 30-minute individual meeting with your PSAP. Feel free to invite your chiefs or PSAP leadership, anybody that could benefit from kind of the state of your PSAP as far as integration goes. Obviously, we've made a lot of trips out to your PSAP, and we want to basically bring forward our checklists and our things that we've done to basically ensure that we're all lined up and that everybody's pre-coordinated going into cutover. You can see the topics there. I won't read them all. And I guess we'll go to Tina, and then we'll take questions. Go ahead, Tina.
Okay, so someone asked me in the chat if we were going to talk about our Nevada project. So we do have a plan that is in process with Nevada to link our system with 17 of their sites along the Nevada border and the Arizona border on the west side, the south side of the state. So all along the west side and down along the south side of the state. That is, our goal is to get that up and running by October so that our agencies will be able to utilize their towers, their towers. So I don't know. We will be also reaching out order with and working on similar projects, but for right now we're just working with Nevada on this project. I don't know if there's a lot to bring up about it but just as an FYI, I guess, for the agencies, if the chiefs, if you haven't heard, I know the PSAPs know about it, but for the chiefs, if you haven't heard, if you border Arizona or Nevada, this is going to become something that we'll hopefully have online around October. Kylie Slater asks, when do we need to have any changes that need to be made to the code plug turned into UCA that can be put into our final cut? 6 months ago. And who do you send it to? Mike Vienendahl. If he grants it, that's lucky. The P25Ds that you'll be sending out today, hopefully, will they be active on the new system now? No. Oh, on the new system now. The answer's
No. The answer's no, but shortly.
Okay, there you go. Okay, I think that's all that we have for you guys. We appreciate everyone jumping on. We know it was long. We know it was, we intermixed PSAP information with agency information. And so it wasn't for everyone the whole time, but hopefully everything we said was helpful to someone at some point. We appreciate your time. If there's something else that comes up, we may have another meeting. But in the meantime, as you can see, we're going to have a lot of stuff scheduled for the PSAPs. And if you have any questions, you can send it to a group email to Mike V, Phil Krebs, and myself, and Dan Dialogue, or you can send it to us individually, whatever. But I just wanted to say in front of everyone on this group, I want to thank my team. They have been killing it. They've all been working endless amounts of hours. Our techs have been working, our programming group, interoperability division, radio division, everyone's been working so, so hard and putting in endless amounts of hours. So I just want to basically acknowledge their hard work. And we're excited, obviously, to get the 19th here and start getting these cutovers under our belt and improving our process as we go along. So big, huge thanks to Kane for being willing to be on the front end of this and probably teach us a few lessons. So we appreciate your support very much. And if you have any questions, let's go now. Logan, Mike, you want to address Logan's question about where Robert Andrews, UCA team will be on vacation from January. Yeah, everyone's going on vacation, Robert. Yeah. Salt Lake City's paying for it with their bond. Okay.
As far
Does anyone have any questions?
Logan, if you can reach out to me, we can walk through that a little bit. Your concerns on that.
Okay, so Bev Burt, anyone know if this will affect the scanners? Will people's scanners not work on this once the system or the switch is made? Correct. They will not work. Will there be actual hands-on training events so that individuals can meet together to better the ins and outs of radio operation? John, is that for the L3H radios or is that what specifically, if you want to go on audio and just ask? John, I would ask you to email Dan Dialogue. He's done some training classes on the L3H radios. Dan, if you can get with him and get his email and send him the training on the radios, that'd be awesome. Do we have dates set up to program L3H portable radios in Salt Lake County? Yes. If you go to our website, Phil looks like he's going back to the screen.
Right there, right?
All radios during the Salt Lake County area. So we need to hit all the radios during the time period. So we'll be in the Salt Lake County area from the 12th of November to the 22nd. And that will include all L3H radios, all Motorola radios, all Kenwood radios that are allowed onto the system.
So, Vienendahl, when you're sending out the list of IDs to the few agencies that have requested them, you'll be sending out the final code plugs too, is that right?
Yes, as those get done, Alan, you should be getting yours as well, right, with it. So yeah, as we get those done and send those out, we'll send them to those agencies that are programming, especially those that are going to do some program before we get there.
Hey, good questions. Anything else?
Thank you.
Hey, I just had one question. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm Megan at King County. So when will the helicopters be switching over with us? Have you worked Lifelight Classic for two main that we use?
So it'll be within areas. So we've been working with Robert Bruff, who does a lot of those helicopter groups down in that area. And so within those areas, he'll be going through alongside of us and reprogramming their radios to have the new system in them as well.
Okay. So when we cut over, we'll still be able to communicate with them?
Yes.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
Thanks, Megan. Hey, anyone else have anything? Again, we appreciate everyone's time and your support on this project. Obviously, we're very interested in it being a huge success and everyone, it being as smooth as possible. So thank you so much.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.